Thanks for joining us for today's episode of The Capitalist Investor. I am back, D.
It's good to have you
back.
It's
been a long time.
I know.
Man.
Well, bad news for you. You know, I'm probably only going to be on the week for, or be on the show for a couple more weeks because I bought some NFTs.
And you're just going to be filthy rich?
Yeah, I'm going to be on my own.
You're retiring? Good for
soon.
You. Good for you.
I mean, that's usually how it works, right? You buy some and 3 weeks later, you're fabulously wealthy.
Well, yeah, I mean, we bake that into all of our financial plans for our clients too, right?
Buying some monkeys.
Yeah, all you got to do, you buy a picture of a rock and you'll retire in 3 months. No problem. Easy money there. So for today's show, Dee found a pretty interesting story on, is this from Kiplinger's?
Yes, sir.
All right. So it's titled Five Beaten Down Stocks to Buy on the Dip. So I want to go through all five of those and, you know, we can just kind of, you know, say yay or nay as to whether or not we agree with them. But before we get into that, kind of the basis for this story is that, you know, September's almost over. By the time this show is posted, it will be over. It'll be October.
Yep.
September's typically a weak month. I don't even know. I mean, we're about 3.5% while we're recording this show off of all time highs.
Right.
So I don't know how weak it's been. I really didn't look at where it was on August 31st to track that. But, you know, nonetheless, September's typically a weak month. We are smack dab in the middle of what Stuart Varney just called Hell Week, right? We've got this fiscal collision course of you got the debt ceiling, you got the infrastructure package, you've got the progressives $3.5 trillion package. You know, really all these headwinds that could roil the markets a little bit.
Right. For sure. Yeah.
The one I want to briefly mention, and this will probably be old news by the time this airs, but I do want to talk very briefly about the debt ceiling issue. Mm-hmm. It seems like people believe that we're going to default on our debt. And as a country, we generate $4 trillion a year in cash flow. And the interest payments on our debt is $300 billion. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, we're okay. Like, chill out. Like, we'll be fine. What'll end up happening is if we don't vote to increase the debt ceiling, the Democrats are actually going to have to use part of their reconciliation budget to increase the debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. That's going to eat into their $3.5 trillion progressive package, which is really just the Green New Deal and human infrastructure, whatever that is, being shoved down everyone's throats.
Yep.
Right.
It's what, 11% infrastructure in the infrastructure package?
Yeah. Yeah.
seems a bit light.
Well, that's it's an ugly package, right? Yep. But nonetheless, so that all that stuff's going on. And Dee, I've been talking about this probably for the last few weeks on TV. I think we're going to see a correction in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
we haven't seen a 10% pullback all year. I think the deepest we've gone is maybe 4.5%.
Right.
And in a typical year, your normal correction is about 12, 13, 14%, somewhere in that range. We haven't seen that for a while. Okay. But if I look under the surface and I look at the 500 stocks in the S&P 500, over half of them are in a correction. Mm-hmm. Now, we're only like 3.5% from an all-time high. So the overall market is down only 3.5%. But half of the stocks in the index are down 10% or more.
Right.
So the average stock is in a correction, right? And what we're seeing happening, Dee, is exactly what COVID did to this country. COVID destroyed small businesses, and it made the big guys even stronger.
Right.
Right? You look at the Walmarts, the Amazons, Microsoft, Apple, Zoom, which came out of nowhere, right? Now that's a household name. Everybody Zooms. Mm-hmm. It's a verb. It's not just the name of a company anymore.
Right.
Just like Googling something. Google became a verb. So I think, how's the saying go? The chickens are going to come home to roost?
Yes, you got that one.
Right, dude. I'm not very good with those idioms or whatever they're called, but once in a while I can, you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut, you know?
Rising tides lift all boats.
Man, we just nailed three right there. That's pretty good. So I think there's going to be a correction. Now, for us as money managers, and you can give me your perspective, we welcome corrections. Mm-hmm. I want a correction. And here's why. A 10% pullback or more is going to give us an opportunity as a firm to reshuffle our positions.
Right.
I mean, I'm looking at our positions and I'm like, I kind of want to move some money around. But I look at them and I'm like, well, nothing looks like it's priced reasonably. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a lot of buying opportunities out there right now. So I would welcome a pullback so that we could reshuffle our portfolio. I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
It's kind of a weird thing to say when you're managing money. But mm-hmm. in order for us to do the best thing for our clients, we need to have an opportunity to get out of some positions we think are not poised to have a great next 12 months and into some positions that we think are going to do better.
Right. Yeah, you said a lot there. But I think the reason I kind of gravitated towards this article was not so much about the five names that we're talking about, but kind of in the overall position that the market is in.
Yep.
And you're exactly right on the, you know, on the pullback leading to buying opportunities. That may sound just like something that, you know, money managers say when the market goes down, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And we're just in a very, very strange time right now. You know, are coming out of COVID? Are we not coming out of COVID? It's gone back and forth. I don't know how many times now. There's been the reopening trade discussion, you know, four or five times now.
Yep.
So now is kind of the time. It kind of feels like the rubber is meeting the road.
Yes. That's number four.
Boom.
You got it.
So to kind of get to the next stage of the economy, you know, yep. the post-COVID economy, and what does that look like, right? And what has happened as this bull market continues to run for a lot of names, some of the names have been left behind.
Yep.
And those are the names that we kind of want to focus on, you know, in our portfolios that we build out for our clients, for sure. Because you said it, there's things are getting a little stale.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's obviously some companies, some stocks out there that are probably overvalued, but are continuing to be propped up with all the outside forces, whether it's,
yeah.
you know, a comeback from COVID, whether it's just there's not a lot of other attractive places to put money right now. So all of these things, I kind of agree with you, I think are probably going to get washed out in the fourth quarter. We've done a show about sell in May and go away,
yep.
right? So,
yeah.
Which we pretty much debunked, or not pretty much, we did.
Yes, we did.
So
we beat that thing down.
Yep. But now is the time historically when things kind of come back from that lull.
The fall is mm-hmm. the fourth quarter is a good quarter.
Yep.
Very strong quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this time is going to be a bit different.
Yep.
And who knows? Actually, I shouldn't say that. Maybe from October 1st through December 31st, I actually believe the market will end higher.
Mm-hmm.
But I think intra-quarter, we will see a 10% pullback.
Right.
It'll get bought quickly and it'll rebound quickly because that's kind of status quo. That's that's par for the course.
Five.
Boom. That's par for the course nowadays because, you know, all of these corrections are becoming shorter and shorter and shorter.
Yes. It's strange to see. It really is.
Like, I think during the Great Recession, I want to say it took 6 years to regain those prior highs from mm-hmm. October of 2007. And I think it took us 6 months this time around.
Yep. You remember back in the fourth quarter of 2018?
Oh, yeah.
It crashed real hard going into, I think, Christmas Eve, right?
Yeah, I think it was down 19.8% or something mm-hmm. like that. Then everyone's like, all right, bear market, yeah. which it wasn't yet. Time to buy.
Yep. It came back in I feel, weeks. I don't know the exact timeline, but
quickly.
I feel by the end of January. It was
probably pretty close.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I think this is the quarter where investors are going to find themselves with some opportunities.
Right.
And you want to be prepared to take advantage of those opportunities. So let's move into these five stocks that Kiplinger's mentions.
Yep.
I think a few of them are actually, you know, I did a little research, which is why I hopped into this a little late, just so I can kind of give my feedback on whether or not I think, you know, these are good values right now. Now, mm-hmm. let's keep in perspective our investment strategy. Mm-hmm. Our investment mandate, I should say, is growth at a reasonable price. We want companies that are growing. I have very little interest in owning utilities. They don't do it for me.
Right.
Now we're going to own one because we have to, mm-hmm. because we have to be somewhat in alignment with the weightings of the S&P, but I'll never talk about the one I own. It's just not interesting, no. right? So look, we want to buy companies that are growers. They're durable growers, but we're also not willing to overpay. So, you know, there's got to be some relative value in these positions for us to buy them.
Yep.
So why don't you kick it off with the first stock?
All right. So the first stock on this list is Deere & Company. So John Deere, pretty much a household name at this point. Not at this point. I mean, it's been a household name for a long time. I currently have it around
$350.
$350. But kind of my first problem with this one as a, you know, buy low candidate is I think it is up around 31% year to date.
Yeah.
So, you know, I understand, you know, this article is, and we'll link it in the show notes. This article is identifying, you know, recent pullbacks, and
because it peaked at around 400.
Right.
And if it's 350, that's $50 over 400. You know, that's what, a 12.5% pullback.
Yep.
Right. But was the 400 ever justified? That's the question, D.
Yep.
I knew you were going there, so I had to steal your thunder.
Yep.
but if you go back to the COVID trough, March 20th or whatever it was of 2020, the S&P has pretty much what, doubled?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little more than doubled?
It has. I looked it up for the NFT show.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Because I think we bought them somewhere around 2,100 or so. Deere has over tripled.
Right.
So is it a bargain when it has tripled off the bottom and the rest of the market only doubled? Only doubled. Quotes, use quotes there.
Yep.
So I don't know, man. I think this is one that it's not cheap. It actually trades at a 5% premium to its mm-hmm. peers right now.
Right.
With the 12.5% pullback baked in. I think I would pass on this one. This is a company I would love to own, but mm-hmm. I think it's got to drop further.
I agree.
You know, it's a fantastic company. You can't go wrong with the quality of the company.
Right.
But I think it needs to drop a little further for me to get excited.
I'm completely with you there. Yeah, I completely agree. While it is it's an awesome company, probably a great company to, you know, buy and hold for a long duration in your portfolio for those people listening out there. As far as a, you know, big bump from a discount on the price, I don't see it.
Yeah.
With them right now.
Yeah. If you give me that thing on another 10% pullback, mm-hmm. and I think I'd get interested.
Right.
Put that thing in a bear market.
Yep.
I want that down at least 20% from that 400 level until I get interested.
Yep, for sure.
All right. So that one gets an X. Let's move on to the next one, which is UBS.
Right.
So UBS is up 16% year to date. I don't know what the market's up, maybe 20% or so.
Yep.
All right. So slightly underperforming the market. Are they the biggest asset management firm?
Yes, they are. $2.6 trillion in AUM, assets under management.
So this is more of a pure play on asset management, as opposed to like a Morgan Stanley, which has their asset management division, mm-hmm. but also does a lot of investment banking and stuff like that.
Right.
I think this is, I shouldn't say it's a pure play, but it's... there's more of a focus on the asset management side of things.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, asset management, those fees are recurring.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice business.
Yes.
We're in it.
Right.
Yeah. The fees are recurring fees. Whereas investment banking fees are one-time fees, right? And we're in that business too. So, you know, obviously, my opinion has always been, and I mentioned this about Salesforce on Fast Money years ago, and they laughed at me, and I'm laughing at them now. They thought the valuation was too rich. I'm like, come on, it's all recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. And the switching costs are so painful
You can't do it.
No, because you've got to custom build it.
Right.
You can't switch ever. They could jack up prices by 20% and you got to stay with them.
Yep, absolutely.
You know? So UBS is actually, dude, it's trading at a 20% discount to its peers. It's kind of nice.
I agree.
I think I'm in on this one.
Yep. I like it.
I don't own it, but I think I might buy it.
You know, I was thinking the same thing, honestly. Yeah. It's a, if you ever watch golf on TV, you know, these guys are advertising all the time. And that's, if you're advertising during golf tournaments, you're probably a company that I would look to buy, because the target audience for those tournaments lends itself to, you know, making a lot of money.
Yeah.
So the UBS is a name I've always liked, and it's really just the business. They're the largest wealth manager in the world, and that is a great business to be in right now, just by the pure numbers. You know,
yeah.
I understand that, you know, the average 30-year-old might not ever have an asset manager or a wealth manager. But all the baby boomers that are retiring have retired and continue to retire. That is not going away anytime soon. So,
right. And with all the liquidity that's entered the market, and there's still a lot of cash on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And that cash will flow towards these asset management firms.
Yep. And you see it every time there's a small pullback. There's always cash on the sidelines buying that dip.
Yeah. All right. So UBS gets a check.
Yep.
Up next is Vertex. Mm-hmm. What's your take on Vertex?
You know, honestly, I didn't really look at this much before, you know, this article. It looks like their main focus is on treating cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, the TAM on that doesn't seem to be that great.
No, it does not.
I mean, it's an awful disease, don't get me wrong, but it's a more rare disease.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any numbers on that by chance?
I don't have the numbers on that one. I'm sorry. So, you know, as far as the company goes, the pharmaceuticals obviously are always going to be directly correlated to whatever, you know, drug or treatment that they're trying to sell. What I do like on this one, as far as an entry point right now, it is down quite a bit year to date. I had 22%. So it is a decent value relative to its old prices, but again, is the old price, was it justified? You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I don't want to agree with Mark on every single point. I think I know which way he's going on this one. I would be in the camp of let's wait and see for a little bit on this one. But
yeah,
at the moment right now, where it's trading around $185, I would probably be out.
I'm definitely out of this one. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it would have to get really cheap for me to get interested. So it's down 22% this year, but it's still trading at a 16% premium to its peers.
Mm-hmm.
A premium to a company like Regeneron. And Dee, we've talked about this multiple times. From a pharmaceutical standpoint, I think the biggest endemics, you know, everyone uses pandemic now, but you know, the biggest endemics we have to deal with as a country remain cancer and diabetes.
Right.
So I like the players that gravitate towards those two diseases, mm-hmm, and try to either treat or cure those diseases, mm-hmm, right? Or prevent them, whatever it might be. So that's kind of where I gravitate. You know, I said this about Gilead years ago, with their HIV drug.
Mm-hmm.
It at one time, HIV was wreaking havoc on the entire world.
Right.
And now, you know, you basically take a pill a day and you can live a healthy life. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, and I think that I kind of feel the same way about cystic fibrosis, obviously a very terrible disease. This one, you can't take a pill a day. this one, you know, will eventually get you, unfortunately. But I would pass on Vertex. I'd rather own a company like Regeneron or, you know, I've mentioned a lot of biotech plays in the past, like DermTech and stuff like that I prefer.
Yep.
All right. Up next, Visa.
So, you know, Visa, if you, and again, another golf reference, I apologize, But sometimes, you know, you get on the tee and there's just a hole that it catches your eyes. It sets up nice for you, and you're probably going to make a good score on that hole. There's others that don't set up well for you, and you'll probably struggle with it every time.
Yep.
So I know I have probably more struggle holes than good holes, but Visa for me is just one that just always lines up to my eye. I just always seem to like it. It's the largest process payment system in the world. The world is spending a lot of money right now.
Yeah.
With right now, not a whole lot else to do. I know, you know, people are traveling now. I see a lot of people are planning to travel this fall and things like that. But, you know, just the business that they're in, especially versus their peers, I'm just a Visa guy. I like Visa. They're only up, I think, around 4% year to date as well, and have taken a hit since the beginning of August.
Yeah.
So for all those reasons, I'm in on Visa right now.
Yeah, I'm in as well. I mean, they're making more of a push towards digital payments, mm-hmm. obviously, which is where, you know, the entire world is heading. Everyone wants that frictionless experience,
right?
When you're buying something on your phone, and you know, anytime Apple Pay is an option, I use Apple Pay.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I absolutely love it. But the credit card that is in my Apple Wallet happens to be a Visa.
Yep.
You know, so I like Visa. I think it looks like a pretty good buy here. It's been a dog.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it should have been a dog. It's actually not up that much since its COVID bottom. I don't have the number in front of me, but it was just maybe 20% from its COVID bottom. It wasn't great. The performance hasn't been fantastic at all. Do you have the graph in front of you?
Here.
All right, let's pull this bad boy up. It looks like more than 20%. Maybe I was looking at its pre-COVID level.
All right. So we will call the COVID bot. Well, not on this one.
All right. We'll come back to that. Let's move on to the next one, which is Dow Chemical, right? Not Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Right.
Ticker DOW, up 6% year to date. I like this one. I don't get excited about buying a chemical stock, but dude, this thing, if you hop onto Bloomberg and you look at its long-term projected growth, it's 27% per year.
Yep.
Trading at a PE of 7, a forward PE of 7. This thing's dirt cheap. You're getting great growth for next to nothing. And it's trading at a 13% discount to its peers.
Right.
I don't care what chemical they make. I think I want to buy this. It's just from a valuation standpoint, from a growth standpoint, very attractive right here.
Absolutely. Yep. I'm with you on all those points. I'm not an expert on the chemical industry and the chemical business. I know it hasn't been going so well. You know, just talking with some of my clients who are in that business. But at the same time, the valuations seem to be very, very attractive right now. There's obviously a built-in growth story in here. And if you read this article, too, on Kiplinger's, they give it the highest grade that they have in this article as far as a buy value. So, you know, for all those reasons, it looks very, very, very cheap right now.
Yeah, yeah. We've always been big fans of Sherwin-Williams.
Mm-hmm.
But that one looks like it's a little pricey. Yep. Maybe we flip-flop into Dow. I like that one as well. All right, man, good stuff. As always, thanks to every single one of you for listening to us. We appreciate it. We appreciate your support and your listenership, if that's actually a word.
I think so.
All right, good. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Make sure you write us a good review. We are in the process of ordering some new swag.
Yeah,
get
new
you guys some hoodies since it's about to get chilly outside. As always, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in the podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any investment, legal, financial, or tax strategy. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. Please consult a qualified professional about your individual needs.